Welcome to another episode of Adoption, The Making of Me.
I'm Louise Brown.
And I'm Sarah Reinhart.
Make sure to find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as Adoption, The Making of Me podcast.
You can also find us at our website, adoptionthemakingofme.com.
And please remember to subscribe, share, and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. On today's episode, we will be discussing a new book, Relinquished: The Politics of Adoption and the Privilege of American Motherhood by Gretchen Sisson. And then we will be speaking to fellow adoptee Margaret Chain.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Louise. Guess what this Saturday is?
Let me guess. Is it our Patreon Zoom?
It's our Patreon Zoom, where we will be discussing attachment styles.
Yeah. And you should join at the $10 level and join us. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern. We would send you a link to listen to a podcast about attachment styles. And it's a great group. You really have a community that starts to build. You know, at first you'll be new, but then you'll say, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. It just fills me up.
Yeah. It feels really good being there. I love it. I look forward to it.
I do too.
Yeah. Okay. So join us.
I'm going to also give a plug for our merch. Merch.
Yes. Another great episode.
You can wear it. You can drink from it.
Yes, exactly. Represent. Hi again, Louise.
Hi again, Sarah. This is big, this book already.
Yep. To reiterate, if you missed the little introduction, we are discussing Relinquished by Gretchen Sisson, The Politics of Adoption and the Privilege of American Motherhood. This book covers current adoption from 2000 to 2020. And she focuses primarily on the birth mothers. So it's, I guess you could sort of say it's like the modern day, the girls who went away, but she does touch on adopted people as well.
I like how she spells out. So she's a doctor who got really into the research of this over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like her. She very much spells out what she's doing in it. I'm not tackling international adoption. I'm not speaking for this, but I am telling you what the discourse is around adoption. Already, I told you before we got on camera, I feel like we should just read the whole introduction out loud
because
every part of it is amazing.
And well, here's the thing. When we got the book, I was like, okay, I'm not going to use a highlighter. I couldn't help it. I just pulled out my highlighter. Gretchen, if you're hearing this, maybe one day we can get signed copies of this book.
Please, Gretchen, because mine's marked up everywhere.
Yes, I've already started. So here I found this super interesting because, you know, like during the baby scoop era, millions of babies were scooped, as they say, from their birth mothers, right? So now, in recent years, only about 19,000 women have relinquished newborns annually out of approximately 4 million births, and in contrast to just under 1 million abortions. Mm. These rates mean that while over the course of their reproductive lives, nearly 86% of American women will give birth and 25% will have an abortion, less than 1% will relinquish an infant for private adoption.
Yes. And when I read that, didn't your mind go, oh, we're low on a domestic supply of adoptees?
Domestic supply of infants, yeah. The domestic supply of infants. Well, and she gets into all this. So she's in this first introductory chapter, she follows a girl, young girl named Haley, who in 2009, you know, was grappling with her pregnancy. She already had a 4-year-old. Now that she was pregnant again, her parents were kind of like, we already helped the birth father's
sketch
unsafe, but she wanted to do everything to try to keep her baby.
Yeah, which is what most people, I think the narrative isn't that, you know what I mean? We're going to find out because she interviews hundreds of women, but I think that is the narrative that most people don't want to. And she gets into, well, we're going to get into poverty and race and all the things that go into this. I like this part that you and I speak about often. Of course, the cultural narrative praising adoption wasn't just on MTV. She was talking about how they did 16 and pregnant or something to scare people. The film Juno, portraying a spunky, sarcastic teen. People, the white savior, Sandra Bullock's character in The Blind Side, Sex and the City. I mean, there's
Ever since that, you know, of course, what's come out about that Twohees or whatever their name was.
Yeah.
Was for The Blind Side.
Michael. Yeah. So it's like, this is still the narrative. And I like that she's touching upon what is the narrative. Like she really went into, okay, what are people seeing? What's the narrative in the country? This is the only bipartisan
right. politics. Yes. Yet adoption. Okay. Well, first I wanted to read this part. By transferring infants from poor, young, underprepared, or unsupported women to mostly married, often heterosexual, typically white families of financial means, private adoption is believed to avert the need for abortion, nullify the purported adverse outcomes of teen parenting, alleviate the social burden of caring for under-resourced families, appease the pain of infertility, and uphold the value of the two-parent heteronormative family structure or accommodate non-traditional families. In this common vision, adoption is a conservative panacea. It represents a particular effective private solution to myriad social problems.
Right.
Then we get into this context does not mean that adoption is embraced solely by the political right. In the decades since she began the project, American politics have changed dramatically, yet adoption remains one of the few bipartisan areas of political agreement. Yeah. We have talked about this a lot on this podcast.
A lot. And I didn't know even, you know, President Barack Obama and Donald Trump same feelings on. And honestly, I can see why. So it's not, if you're not involved in it or learning about it, I mean, I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, the same thing. I mean, maybe I would.
I mean, the public narrative has not changed in all of these years. This kind of like made my stomach jump.
Yeah.
The March for Life's 2014 theme of thank you, birth mom.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, thank you, birth mom.
This is kind of what she's doing here. She says, the stories that I've collected over the last decade illuminate what types of motherhood, which children and whose families are most valued by our society. Hello. And how individual life trajectories are shaped when the looming forces of abortion politics, religion, conservative family values, and non-traditional family building intersect to create narratives about adoption that are rooted in the experiences of those who live it. And it goes on for more, but she's very... Already, I know we're going to get some stuff that I don't, that's just going to be mind blowing, actually.
Right. Because we really have, you know, aside from personal memoirs, we've pretty much covered the baby scoop era. We haven't dove deep into this era. And I'm so glad that this rich book, you know, that there's this, it's another, you know, this is going to be with American Baby and others.
The book.
Our history. I did put down, you know, back to that political stuff. Yep. Adoption makes possible the maintenance of both the heteronormative family ideal beloved by the right and the non-traditional chosen family ideals embraced by the left. But all these ideals prioritize the families that are being created with little reliance on or accountability for the families that are separated.
Yeah. That's kind of it. It's it.
Again, you know, I had so much I highlighted, and I don't want to take up the whole time, but I do want to touch on the Supreme Court decision, right?
Of course.
During the oral arguments for Dobbs in December 2021, the questions the Supreme Court justices asked did little to probe what the burden would be for American women who were denied abortion access, what it would mean for their physical and mental health, their families, their futures, their communities. Instead, given the opportunity to reverse 50 years of constitutionally protected access to abortion, many questions centered on adoption. Justice Amy Coney Barrett asked if all of those potential burdens could be averted if more women terminated their parental rights after giving birth. Essentially, isn't adoption the solution?
Yeah. That's where we're headed. That's why people need to read this and be educated, because this affects so many things down the pike, okay? It's not, we're out of even just adoptees here. This affects so much. And so the girl Haley that Sarah talked about that she touched upon did end up relinquishing Elijah, her child, who was raised in an open adoption that she didn't want, but the parents, the adopted parents did. And they really, she was in a, was she?
Well, she too was an adoptee.
Adoptee, right. So they, they kind of took
her. So she had a lot of her own.
Yeah. And they took her in sort of, which was, and they became this nice family, which.
Well, we'll see how, where that goes. Right. We don't know yet where that goes.
Well, I like this part because it's like, so far it's nice. And then she says, Rachel and Mark's gift, that's the parents. Surely the foundation was strong enough to weather all that for a lifetime. Everything that she had gone back to school and she was close to Elijah. And then it said it would take 10 years and hundreds of interviews with women like Haley for me to understand why it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10 years. This is research based. And
yeah, these are research. I just want to again highlight, while the families formed by adoption are often visible to us, the families separated by adoption are often unseen.
Yeah, still. And look at the title of the next chapter that we're going to dig into next week when you buy your book and join along.
Buy your book. We'll put a link to the book in our show notes. Next week, we start with chapter one, which is pretty dense. So next week, we'll just be reading chapter one,
the title, Supply
of Infants. Yes. Yeah. Again, something we've talked extensively about on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a great season.
Yeah. Really, really. Gretchen, thank you for writing this book. We haven't even gotten through it, but we know it's important. And thank you.
Yeah. We're excited to highlight it. Well, now we get to speak to Margaret Jane.
Yes. A great interview. You guys are going to love her. She's so young. That's what's amazing.
And yeah, it's a good one.
Yep.
Stay tuned. See you in a minute. So we are here today with Margaret Jane Krause, who's joining us from Michigan, way up there in Michigan, actually. And what was it? Carson City. Welcome. Yep. Nice to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. We were just talking about how spring has went away.
Yes.
Cold weather has returned.
Yes, all the snow. It's miserable. Mm.
All the snow. And this has been a while that we've been trying to have this interview. So, you know, we want to know your story. How did you find us? And tell us your whole history here.
Well, let's see. I'm not sure how I found you guys, actually. I'm always looking for adoptee-led content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe through Damon Davis, but I started listening.
He's a good friend to us.
Yeah, he's the best.
I love Damon.
Yes, he's great. And I found you guys, I don't know, I think it was like halfway through your first season. And then I started listening from the beginning. I've listened to every episode.
Oh.
So I've been around a little while.
You heard us. Big fan. Come out of the fog.
Yes. I did. I witnessed that in real time.
Real time.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Well, tell us about you. You know, start wherever you want to with your origin story.
Okay. So I will start with my adoptive parents. They got married a little later in life. So they kind of wanted to start a family immediately. And they had a lot of trouble with that. They had several miscarriages. And after a few years, they decided they were going to look into adoption. It wasn't a totally foreign thing for them because my adoptive grandmother is also adopted. And then my mom's best friend in high school was adopted. So they were aware of it. And it was very strange how we got connected. I always have a hard time, like, where do I start with this? Because it's so strange. They didn't go through an agency or anything. They just kind of told their community that they were unable to conceive and they were looking to adopt.
Was this in Michigan or in another state?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This was all in Michigan. So they just told their community. Was
what era? Sorry, if you don't, I don't want to out your age. I'm just curious.
Oh, no, I'm only 26. I was born in 1997.
Oh, my gosh, you're my son's age. That's when he was born. Interesting. Oh, wow. I'm excited to hear this. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, okay, so this was
just a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, 1997. Well, it would have been 96 when they started this process, or 95. I'm not sure. But anyway. So they just told their community, we're looking to adopt. We're not like going to an agency yet. We're just kind of in the very early phases, just like thinking about it. And my mom actually she created a nursery out of their guest bedroom. And she said, if I make a nursery with all this stuff, God will put a baby in it. That was like her mentality. So their friends, Steve and Lisa, came over one day and they were like, do you have an announcement? Like, what's with this crib and this nursery? It's like fully equipped for a baby. She said, no, I just think if I make a nursery, I'll end up with a baby. Maybe I'll have a baby. Maybe we'll adopt. Something will happen. And that's just kind of how she is. It's how my mom is. And yeah, so the community knew. The community knew that they wanted a child, regardless of how it got to them. So basically, they were on a work trip way in northern Michigan. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Mackinac Island.
Mm-hmm.
They were on Mackinac Island for a work event. We live about 4 hours south of Mackinac Island.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Because it was 97, presumably a little more awareness than, say, the baby scoop era.
Yes.
Were there, and know it, and their connections to adoption, were they aware of adoption trauma when they decided to go into this? Were they aware of relinquishment trauma and issues surrounding adopted people?
No, a little bit. I know my mom's best friend who was adopted had read The Primal Wound because that had come out a few years before I was born. So she was somewhat aware. Not as aware as they are now. They've come a long way. But at the time, not really. My grandma was adopted in the 30s.
Mm. Yeah.
Totally different mindset. Totally different. Just not even the same thing that it is today. So they were kind of basing everything off of my grandmother, who was very positive about it all. Just like, this is how it was supposed to be. This is great. Everything's great. I love my life. And so they were like, well, this will be fine. So somewhat, but not to the degree that they are now, or you know, how adoptions are now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they were on this work trip and the community knew they were looking for a baby. Explaining this is so strange. So Lisa, the friend, got a phone call from her sister. These names are important later in the story. So that's why I'm telling you all these people.
Okay.
She got a call from her sister and her sister said, my best friend's niece is pregnant. She was planning to put the baby up for adoption. She had a family the whole way through that she was going to place. It fell through. And she was like 3 weeks away from her due date. And Lisa said, well, I have these friends. Maybe we could try to connect them. So my parents were on this trip. This is before cell phones. There wasn't really a way to get a hold of them. So my grandmother, who was also friends with Steve and Lisa, Lisa tried to get a hold of my grandma, the adopted one. My grandma's trying to get a hold of them. Finally, they get a hold of them. They drive all the way from Mackinac Island down to Ohio, where my birth family is, to meet, like within a 24-hour span. And they met my biological mother, who was hugely pregnant with me. I think this was August.
How old was she?
20.
20.
So they met with her, and she ended up feeling really good about it and choosing them that day and saying, hey, let's go through with this. They also met my biological grandparents and uncles at the time. They met at their house, actually, at my biological grandparents' house. And they had several meetings before I was born. Like, they really developed a relationship before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to know each other. And they were really good friends before I was born. So
what was the circumstances? I mean, not to tell her story of why she... I mean, she had family support. Everybody's there. But what was her situation?
So my biological father at the time, he was a lot older than her. And he was addicted to drugs, basically. Mm-hmm. And she did not know that when she got pregnant. She thought that he was just a normal guy. And they had planned to raise this baby together. And it was all going to be fine. And, you know, halfway through her pregnancy, she found out this guy is a mess. And then she found out, she tried to convince him. She was like, you got to get your life together so we can raise this kid. I'm going to have this baby. And she found out that he was involved with some people. He had this friend who was also a drug addict who was basically pimping out his 8-year-old daughter to fund his drug habit. And she said, no way is this baby ever going to be around these people. So that was what made her decide was him. It wasn't anything with her. I know she was young, but she had a good job.
Mm-hmm.
She was established.
And she was kind of afraid too that he would try to stay in the picture even if she didn't want him in the picture. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he said he would. He was like, I'm going to be part of this baby's life. You're not getting rid of me. I'm not going to change my habits. You know, I know it's not that simple, but she just couldn't escape the situation, which was very unfortunate because her parents were upper middle class, you know, attending church, involved in their community. My biological grandfather was a police officer. My biological grandmother was a nurse, just like normal, good people. And she had their support. She was living with them. It wasn't anything on her end. Like she was fine. She was trying to protect me from him and his family. His family kind of had a reputation of not being the best in the community. There was a lot of drugs. There was a lot of addiction, which she didn't know when she got into a relationship with him. So it was just very unfortunate.
And so
they all meet and the decision is made.
Yes. And I was told growing up, one of the main reasons she ended up choosing my adoptive parents is because my adoptive father and my biological father look very similar. They look like brothers. And so she said, I think it'll be better for this baby if she has someone that she looks like growing up. She was aware of that back then, which is really interesting to me. She's like, she'll have a genetic mirror. And so that was one of the main reasons. And she just really clicked with my dad. She really, they have similar personalities, my birth mother and my adoptive father. And she just really enjoyed him. And she was like, he looks like this guy and maybe this will work out. So that was a big deciding factor for her.
And then was it an open adoption? Like, did you grow up knowing her or was that saved for later?
So that is, it's strange because, you know, like open to closed adoption is such a wide variety of things.
Yeah. It's a spectrum, so, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So technically it was open in the sense that they all met each other. Everybody knew where everybody lived. They had contact and they had contact the first year of my life. I think there were maybe two visits, but like regular photo updates, letters, emails, a lot of correspondence between the two families. And then after a year, it fizzled out and there was no contact. And then I actually didn't even know I was adopted until I was 8 years old.
Wow.
Wow.
Really? Yeah. Which is really, really strange thinking about how it was in that first year. And then it was just like nothing.
Why? Why did they wait so long?
You know, I think it was the counsel of my grandmother, who was a 1938 adoptee. She did not know until her wedding day. Her mother told her on her wedding day. I know. Which is like the typical story we hear, these older adoptions.
Yeah.
And so I think they just, my parents just did not have any other counsel at the time. And they're like, well, mom's great. Let's just kind of replicate that. I just think they didn't have the information. And it's like they knew enough to kind of keep it open.
Had read the Primal Wound.
Yeah. I know. I don't know how much they talked about it though. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how close they were at the time. It was her high school best friend. So I don't know if they were like close at the time, if it was just kind of like a brief, you know, passing conversation. So yeah, just, it's kind of a strange dynamic. So I didn't know until I was 8 and they actually didn't tell me. I told them as an 8-year-old, kind of a strange story. My mom was cleaning out her closet and she was getting rid of clothes. She pulled out this shirt and I said, that's the shirt that you had me in. Like, I've seen a picture of you holding me as like a new baby in hospital. That's the shirt you were wearing. And she goes, uh-huh. Like, cause this picture had been on our wall, you know, me as a newborn. And so the conversation kind of died there. And then later in the day, I was like, am I adopted? Because I knew I had been born in Ohio, but we had never lived in Ohio. So I said to them, why did you have a baby in Ohio if we live in Michigan?
Aren't you smart?
Smart girl.
I don't even know how I was 8 years old. Like, imagine,
I think we intuit like something's a little off.
Oh, for sure.
And even knowing about what adopted meant, or, you know, like putting the pieces together like that. Does that tell you a lot about adopted people, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I knew my grandma was adopted, and I was always fascinated with stories like Madeline. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Madeline, the cartoon, the book. I loved Tarzan, like all of these like really adoption themed movies that are very complex without even knowing. I mean, I knew intuitively, but I didn't know. So I said to them, why'd you have a baby in Ohio? That's weird. Did we live in Ohio? No, we didn't live in Ohio. And then I was like, okay, so I'm adopted. And they were like, well, yeah, guess you figured that out. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just asked a few questions and they answered, and it was kind of tabled at that point. I mean, I was 8 years old. I wasn't like asking the circumstances. I asked what my biological parents' names were. I think I asked if I had any other siblings because I was an only child.
I was going to ask that if you had other siblings. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were like, well, here's their names. We don't know. You know, we think they're still in Ohio. We could find them someday. And then they kind of briefly told me that they did have contact for a little while. And that was kind of it for a while.
Do you remember having any feelings about it? I mean, did it feel, of course, you were only 8, but were there any feelings that you could identify at the time? Or did you just kind of, okay, well, that's the way that is. And I'm going to go ahead and live my kid life.
Yeah, it was both. It was both. I always felt a little out of place in my family. So have you guys ever seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yeah.
Yeah. My adoptive family's Greek.
They're Greek and Italian. Right.
Yeah. Right. So they are like really loud and really emotional and like just this big, crazy, everyone's very close. We all live close to each other. I'm not like that. I'm very reserved and I'm more on the calm side. So I grew up in that environment. So when I put these pieces together and confronted my parents, my mom is the Greek one. She was very emotional about it. Just like, okay, this is all happening right now. We're going to talk about this. My dad was not. He was very level-headed about it. So I did cry in the reaction, almost just kind of like a, okay, we're crying now. Not so much, I feel emotional about this. Like, this is kind of weird.
You were kind of doing what you do as an adoptee, adapting to your situation, responding appropriately.
Yes, definitely.
Mom's crying. This is a big deal.
Yeah. This is a big deal. So
I better get on board and behave like that. Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, they were very loving and kind about it. It wasn't like, this is a big evil thing. We're not going to talk about it. It was just kind of like, I don't know. It didn't come up, which I don't agree with. I think there's an age appropriate way to tell a baby. You know, I think it should 100%. Always be, I think it should always be out. It should always be open. It should always be an open conversation.
Yeah.
It's my life. It's my story. I should know about it. And that was one of the hardest parts when I found out is everyone in my community knew. Like I said, I have this big Greek family. All of my cousins, my mom has a brother that has 7 kids and a brother that has 6 kids. And I was very close with all of them. We all live near each other. I mean, like seeing each other every other day, kind of closeness. These were my best friends.
And they all knew.
They all knew. I was one of the younger kids.
And no one ever said anything. That's pretty impressive.
No one ever said anything. And my parents had said, we're just like not going to tell her. So let's not, you know, just keep it hush hush. And they all did, which is crazy.
Especially for children.
It's crazy. I know. Like little kids. And yeah, so that was the hardest part because when I went around and I was like, hey guys, guess what? I'm adopted. They were all like, yeah, we know that. It's great. Welcome to the party. We all know was how it felt. So as an 8-year-old, even then I was like, I don't like that. That was hard. That was definitely hard.
And you don't have your own. It is your story. I like how you said that. It's your story to know. Mm-hmm. And if anyone listening is an adopted parent, it's important that kids know.
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my hill to die on is openness and adoption. Even if you can't have an open adoption, you need to be open about the adoption with your children.
Yes.
I'm very, very firm believer in that. So.
Mm-hmm. And then how did it go like the rest of.
Yeah. So then you're 8 years old, you have this information.
Yep.
And I mean, of course we go on. This is what happens.
I'm 8, you know, I'm living my life, like, you know, as 8 year olds.
I've got a third grade project due. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like whatever, let's keep going. Yeah. So it didn't really come up again until I was 13 or 14. And my parents, they had been trying to expand their family after they adopted me. They didn't just want one child. They wanted a bigger family. They both came from bigger families. And so they did some fertility stuff that didn't work out. And then they pursued adoption again. And so they had some failed situations. I don't like to say failed, you know, if the biological parent is going to raise their child, I think that's wonderful, but for them. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, but you know, just situations.
That language for sure needs to change. Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But situations that didn't work out for them in their favor. So they ended up doing foster care. And I think when I was 9, we had our first placement. So then it was like this whole concept of adoption is happening right in front of me as a child. And I was way more aware at that point. And then when I was 14, we had a family group placed with us of 3. And then their biological mother had another baby and the baby came straight home to the hospital. Like I went with my parents to the hospital to pick up this child.
Now so I four.
Was. So four. There was 5 right now?
There were 5 including me. Yes.
Including you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up adopting them. Those are my 4 siblings now, but big age gap. So there's actually 15 years between me and the youngest one, and then 10 years between me and the oldest. Mm. So I was hyper aware of adoption at that point, and it became way more in the front of my mind because I was watching it unfold and I was going to the parent visits with their parents and I was going to court hearings. I was very involved. And yeah, so I was much more aware of adoption at that point. And so I mean, with adolescence, I think that's like the hardest phase for an adoptee, right? Or one of the hardest phases. You're trying to figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. You're trying to relate to people. You're trying to see yourself in other people. It's very confusing if you're not adopted. I was adopted. I was confused. And then we have these children placed in our home. And it's like, are they going to go back to their parents? Are they going to stay with us? Are they going to go to another home? So I definitely started to kind of develop a depression at that point because I
Felt really unmoored in a way, right?
Just, and I didn't have any information. You know, I had my birth parents' names and kind of like the age appropriate description of the situation regarding my adoption for an 8-year old, because you can't say to an 8-year old like, yeah, your dad was doing crack and so they couldn't raise you. I had like the age appropriate description, and so I was just, I was kind of depressed. And so it did come up again, but not in a healthy way, in like I'm a really rageful teenager kind of way. So that was kind of the next point in my life in which it came up. And they were placed in our home for almost 2 years in foster care. So we were doing visits, court hearings.
That's too much for a kid your age.
I was going to say, why were you so involved in it?
I wanted to be. And my parents were like, okay, if you can handle it, you can be. And I did. Like, I'm happy I was involved. I have no regrets in that at all. I wanted to go to the court hearings. I wanted to get to know their parents. And I'm really happy because, you know, someday when they want that information, I have that for them. So
well, you're more knowledgeable than your parents about how they might be feeling, obviously.
So I'm very happy I was involved, as hard as it was. I'm glad that I was in the middle of it. So we did, they did end up being placed with us permanently when I was 16. And then when I was 17, almost 17, this is going to sound a little trippy, but I had a dream that I had a sister, biological sister. I had this very vivid dream that I was like interacting with this girl who was my age that looked like me. And my mom, my adoptive mom, she's really into dreams and like their meanings and stuff. So I came downstairs and I told her, she was like, well, maybe you do. And then she went in her closet and had this huge box of like, I call it adoption memorabilia. I don't know how else to describe it. Of just like all of my stuff, like all the pictures. There's pictures of my birth. There's like pictures of me being born. All of their meetings with
you had never seen any of this.
I had never seen it. It never, you know, I never asked. It never came up.
Right.
And me bringing up this dream, my mom was like, "Oh, I should probably give this to you." So I had this box. I had a letter from my birth mom. I had, it was a huge box and it was full. I had presents from them, just like all this stuff. Emails between my biological grandfather and my adoptive grandmother, just like all the correspondence in that first year was in this box. So that was the first time I ever saw any of them.
That's literally like Pandora's box, because your mind must have just been like on. I mean, I have a box like that now and I'm 55, right? And it overwhelms me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was like, okay, wow, that's a lot. So I had all of the information at that point at 16 or 17. And my adoptive mom was kind of funny because she was like, well, let's like look them up on Facebook. Let's see what's going on now. And I was kind of like, I don't really want to yet. Like, I just kind of want to wait. And I did end up looking them up on Facebook. And that's when I found out that my biological mom had two boys that she was raising. So I had two half brothers.
How much younger?
I think there's 8 years between me and my brother. And then another 5 years between the youngest and myself.
So a new man involved.
Yeah. She got married shortly after I was born.
Okay.
To somebody else. And yeah, so I found that out all within a day. It was a lot.
A lot.
I was thankful to have it. I know you listen to these stories and it's like, people don't ever get anything like that.
Yeah.
And I had all of it at 16. So I was thankful to have it. It was overwhelming, but I was glad I finally had it.
I just wanted to know if you found a sister like on your father's side.
No, I haven't yet. No, okay. I haven't yet. It's very, it's suspected that he does have other children that would be my age, but I have yet to find them.
We were in a conversation last night about adoptees. What do they know? What do they have the right to know? It's like, you have the right to know everything.
Everything. All of it.
So even though it's overwhelming, it's more important to have this than this like piecemeal.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's your information. Yeah. It belongs to you.
And I kind of feel funny that like you'd go on and look for them with your mom that you're, you know, your adoptive mom. It's like, no, it's kind of a private, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Well, she too was like, you know, we were friends with these people. We loved them. We developed a relationship and she was like, I want to see them again. And I was like, I do too, but not yet. Let's wait. Let's just,
Let me have a space.
Go slow here for a second. So
were you still in your rageful teenage
phase? No, not so much. No, I kind of come out of it.
So what happened? You just kind of Did you reach out? Did you do anything? Did you wait?
I waited. I did not do anything. I had their phone numbers and their addresses, all of their information. And yeah, I didn't do anything with it. I was like, you know what? I'm going into my senior year of high school. And
I mean, it's big.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going through all these life events. I don't really want to add another one.
Yeah.
I'll wait for a little while. So I waited. Didn't do anything for a while.
And then when did that change? It must have changed. Did it change?
It did change.
Yeah.
it definitely changed.
I don't think you'd be here if it didn't, right?
No. Yeah, no, I just still have the box. I haven't done anything. No. Let's see here. Okay. So this is kind of a funny part. When I got that box, my boyfriend at the time, he came over shortly after I got the box and we went through everything. And he was like way more, you should find these people than I was. I ended up marrying him. I married my high school sweetheart.
Aww.
He is the son of Steve and Lisa.
No. So
Lisa, who connected the families. Yeah. So the aunt, my husband's aunt, Joyce, who connected us.
Wait.
So I'm going to put these pieces together for a second.
Yes.
When you and Isaac, is that his name? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Started dating. You knew his parents, obviously, but did either one of you know that his parents had introduced your parents?
Yes.
Oh, you did know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a ton of details, but we did know there was a connection. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So Isaac's aunt and my biological mother's aunt were best friends and still are to this day. So yeah, really weird connection. And actually my biological mother and her parents and her brother came up. They drove up for my baby dedication when I was a couple months old. So our church, similar to kind of like a baby baptism, we have a baby dedication where all the parents stand up with the babies and the pastor prays over them. And then there's, you know, it's like a party. There's a meal to celebrate these babies. So they were invited to my baby dedication and my biological mother stood up with my adoptive parents for that. And they all kind of dedicated me together. And
Isaac's parents were there.
And they were standing right next to us. So we have pictures of my in-laws holding my husband and my adoptive parents holding me and my biological mother there as well. And
crazy.
All in a row. Like we've had this picture. I've had this picture my whole life. Yeah, it's very strange.
Very strange.
So go on. So then he really wanted to do something. You're like, nah, it's my senior year. I can't take it on.
High school students for now.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we got married very young. We had our first child very young. And like a lot of adoptees say, that first pregnancy stirs everything up like bad. So I ended up being pregnant the same exact age that my birth mother was pregnant with me. I was 20. And you know, I hadn't thought about it. I really genuinely had not thought about it in years since I got the box, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got pregnant and it was like, oh, okay. So somebody carried me like this. Somebody gave birth to me and then that was it. Like, who is this person? I know I had a name, but I didn't know anything about her. And it was just, I could not comprehend it. And it was really hard. It was really difficult in pregnancy.
It is really overwhelming, right?
It is.
You're
and
like,
yeah. What the heck? How did this happen? And I had some details, but not enough.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to get really curious again. I also had a really difficult high-risk pregnancy and I would go into the doctor and they'd be like, this is genetic. This rare, weird thing that you're experiencing is genetic. And I was like, well, okay, I guess I'll believe you. But it was like, somebody went through all of this. This is awful. Like, and I was the result and now I'm just existing in the world without them. And yeah, so it resurfaced and my husband again was like, well, let's just write a letter. Let's just send a letter in the mail to your grandparents because they were very involved. We don't have to reach out directly to a parent. We can just send a letter to your grandparents. And I again was like, we just got married. We're building a house. We're about to have our first kid. I don't want to have this life event yet. I'm not ready. Like, I'm about to have my first son. Let's table this. And he was like, come on, let's go. And I was like, no, we're not doing it yet. So we had our first son. And I didn't realize until later that I had postpartum depression. I just thought it was normal. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that was because of my adoption and mm-hmm. realizing, like, I'm raising this baby. What happened to me? Like, you know, why? I didn't have any answers.
And you're still so very young.
Yes, I mean, very really, young.
Mm-hmm. You are young.
Very young. I was 20 when he was born. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of got out of that fog. And then I started to come out of the adoption fog. And mm-hmm. that's when I started finding podcasts and really just like binge listening to stuff and learning that there were other people that felt the exact same way that I did, feeling less alone. And really, that was very therapeutic for me mm-hmm. because I've tried, you know, traditional talk therapy. And
yeah,
I don't know if I just haven't found the right person, but it just didn't do anything for me.
No.
But listening to other stories and writing other people's stories, that has just done so much for me.
That is a healing thing. I was just saying the other day, like talk therapy. I mean, I know I can talk till the, yeah. you know, as long yeah. as the day is and yeah. that doesn't change it.
It doesn't get me anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's when I started. And then so that's when I started coming out of the fog. And it was like the more stories I listened to and the more I realized that what I was experiencing was normal in this world, the better I felt about it. I was kind of like, okay, I really think that every single adoptee, regardless of the circumstances, regardless how seamless it goes, how good your situation is, everybody has to go through a grieving process.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You can come through the grieving process and accept and move on and it's okay. You're going to be okay, but you have to go through that process. So mm-hmm. after my son was born is when I started that process. And then we got pregnant again with our second son about a year and a half later. And I started to feel all these same things again. And I was like, okay, I don't know. We're going to go through this again. But I wasn't, when he was born, I did not have the postpartum depression. It was a much better experience. And I think it was because I was listening to all these stories. And that's when I started reading, you know, some different books by different adoptees. That's when I found The Primal Wound, all of these things that really helped. And I think I went through the grieving process of my adoption in a really healthy way. I see a lot of people that kind of sit in the bitterness their whole life, which is really sad to me. I understand it because I've been there, but I think I was able to kind of get to the other side and be like, okay, I'm okay now. And I'm going to be okay going forward. And I've accepted that this happened to me. And I was bitter at one point. I don't feel bitter anymore. I'm pretty content with everything.
And Margaret, I think it's interesting. I think some of this, just hearing you in different era, like your son's age, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
You're so mature. And I think some of it is figuring out stuff very young is mm-hmm. like you went through, I mean, just so many scenarios. I'm picturing you at 14, all these kids coming into your home. You're vibing with them in a way of like, okay, I know what they're feeling. Like, it's a lot very young. Like you were exposed to things very young, just even finding this box, the story, it's just having a child young, which brings up things, you know, mm-hmm. at a younger age. It's interesting to me.
So going through all this, did you then go ahead, feel like, okay, now I need to reach out. I need to know my story. I need to talk mm-hmm. to her.
Mm-hmm. So after thousands of episodes of podcasts that I listened to, listening to every single episode of Damon's podcast and all these people reuniting and hearing the really wonderful stories and the really horrible stories, you know, they're all so different. My second son was, I think he was one at the time. And my adoptive mother sat me down and said, we have been contacted kind of, not us directly, but your birth mother contacted your cousin and said that there was kind of like a family health emergency, not emergency, but situation. And she wanted me to go and like get tested for some things and just make sure that I was okay and not going to experience this as well. She wanted me to be aware of the medical history. And I'm a Christian. We're very involved in our church. And so I had been praying up to this point, like, I am a wimp. I cannot reach out to these people. I cannot handle another rejection. I'm mm-hmm. terrified. So if you want me to find these people, you're going to have them come knock on my door. And that was like my sign. Oh, okay. They're reaching out now. This is my window to get in. And so I, right in that meeting with my adoptive mom, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and contact my birth mom then. I think this is like the moment that this is the right time. I don't think I can move forward in this grief process and this coming out of the fog until I reach out. This is the next step. I can't avoid it anymore. So at this point, I was 23. And she's like, she was very supportive. My adoptive mom was. She's like, I think this is great. I think you should do it. And you go ahead and move forward. You can tell us as much as you want. You don't have to tell us anything, but we're supportive. And she said, I think you should call your cousin because he was the one that she contacted. So I called my cousin, and he is the oldest of all my cousins. I was one of the younger ones, so he's quite a bit older than me. He's the same age or a couple years younger than my birth mom. So they had met at my baby dedication and hit it off. And they have been in communication my whole life, which nobody knew. It wasn't like a...
Just he knew.
Like, yeah. And they were friends. It wasn't like a weird thing or like, you know, he's trying to go behind my parents' back or anything. He was just good friends with her. And nobody really knew that. And so that's why she reached out to him, because she had his phone number. They talked on a semi-regular basis. So I called him and he was like, oh, okay, I'll send you like screenshots and stuff of us talking over the years. So I had all of this information and all of these messages from her to my cousin saying, I can't wait until she reaches out. I'm excited to see her again. Like, I'm ready for this whenever she's ready. That was my confirmation of like, oh, I can do this. Like, this is less scary now because she's wanting it. I don't have to wonder if she's going to just slam the door in my face. Like, she's going to accept me. So a lot of people say don't use Facebook, but I Facebook messaged her within a couple days because I had kind of like been stalking her on Facebook all these years.
Yeah.
So like, I knew where she was. So I just sent her a Facebook message. And she responded within like 5 minutes. She's like, I've been waiting. I'm here. Aww. Let's get together. She's like, we're setting a date now. So it was kind of crazy.
This is when you were 23?
I was 23.
So 3 years ago. And have you been in relationship since? And
yes.
And up and down or pretty steady? Good.
Pretty steady. Yeah.
That's great.
She actually kept my kids for my husband and I. She stayed at our house 2 months ago and she kept them for a week so that we could go to Florida for our anniversary. So very close relationship. She, a couple months after I met her, I was able to meet my brothers. They didn't know about me. So that was kind of interesting. But
how did they handle it?
So it was funny. The day that we met, she came to me and we went out to eat. I made my husband come with me because he's like my emotional support person. So I made him come. He's like, you should do this alone. And I was like, heck no, you're coming with me. So he came and I mean, we're sitting there and I'm like, so I have brothers. And she was like, yeah, I didn't tell them about you. You know, they're younger than you. They didn't know. And I sat them down last night and I was like, I'm going to Michigan. You have an older sister. I'm going to go meet her. Do you have any questions? And they were, I think they were 11 and maybe 15 at the time.
I can picture.
I mean, really, like,
I could just
like little boys. Yeah.
My son would be like, what?
I know. What are you talking about? And so the older one was like, I don't have any questions. Just do what you're going to do. And the younger one, his question was, well, is she black? because they're biracial. Their dad is black. So they were like, is she white or black? That was his only question, 11 years old. And she said, nope, she's white. And they said, okay. And she was like, do you have any other questions? And they're like, no. So, I mean, I don't know, little kids. It wasn't a totally foreign concept to them because their dad has a couple kids from a previous marriage that are my age. So they do have older half siblings. So it wasn't like the weirdest thing in the world for them. I don't know. It was just really funny. So a couple months after I met her, she brought them up to my house and she was able to meet my boys and I was able to meet her boys. And that was a really good visit when she came up. And then a few months after that, I had all of my adoptive family over, as well as my biological mom and my brothers. And we just kind of had like a big family cookout together. And we did that it was really good.
This
was really
like
nervous.
The best case scenario you could have.
Really,
right?
I know, it really is. It's funny because I was on Damon's show not that long ago. And my husband, I'll send him stuff and he'll listen occasionally, but he doesn't listen that much. And then I was on Damon's show and he's like, the show is amazing. Damon is amazing. These stories are incredible. So he's been listening to it all the time. And almost every day he'll text me from work and be like, do you realize how great your story is? Right. Like, some of these people, their birth parents are terrible. Their adoptive parents are terrible. Like, I feel so bad for them. And your story is like a fairy tale. And I was like, I know, it's
and
crazy.
And yet you still know how problematic adoption yes. is. So yes. That's still the exactly thing, no matter how great
absolutely.
The story is, there yes. is still trauma. Two final questions. One, birth father.
Okay, so.
Yes, the birth father.
You know, he's the reason I was adopted. He's the reason I'm in this situation. And her entire reason for placing me was to protect me from him.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense of loyalty in that I don't want to. I don't, it's dumb. It's like the typical adoptee. We have to please everybody, but I don't want to like betray mm-hmm. her. I have been kind of watching him from a distance over the years via Facebook. He's one of those people that kind of posts everything all the time.
Mm. Is he sober now?
I mean, I don't think so. Yeah. He doesn't really appear to be in a good place.
That's what
really
I was going to say, where he is. Yeah.
It seems like he's alone in life, and I guess there were a few sightings over the years, people on my maternal biological side that saw him, because they still live in the same town, saw him with children after I was born, like potentially his children. So I think he has other children. I don't think he's in contact with any of them.
Mm.
So he doesn't seem to be in a good place. And I'm at the point where I know if I don't meet him someday before he dies, you know, I'll regret that. Mm-hmm. But I also have three small children,
yeah.
and I don't want to expose them to that.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid of that.
That is a balance. Yeah.
It's been more of a conversation lately again with my husband. He's like, maybe we should. And I'm like,
I mean, you know, you might at some point.
I think I will at some point. Yeah. yeah. I think yeah. there's time.
And maybe he'll get his life together.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he does. Yeah. He's, I don't know. It's hard to tell with Facebook. You never know where someone's at, but he doesn't mm-hmm. seem like he's in a great place. So I don't know, kind of waiting until maybe my kids are a little older. They're 6, 4, and 1 right now. So I don't really so want little. Them.
Are they all boys?
No, my youngest is a girl. Yeah. Okay. I had two boys and a girl.
Okay. And I have a question. So all of this, your biological and your adoptive family meets, did you ever talk to your mom? Like, were you able, your adoptive mom, yeah. were you able to be honest about yes. your feelings about adoption? And yes. was she open to that?
You know, at first, I think it was hard for her. And mm-hmm. I understand. I mean, she went through tremendous amounts of loss trying to create a family. I get it. And at first, she was kind of resistant to it. And recently, she's been coming around and agreeing with me a lot more on stuff and realizing that I'm the one that experienced this and maybe we should listen to the adoptees.
And, my dad, and she has four adoptees.
Yeah. Yes. And mm-hmm. they actually just started therapy with them.
Good.
Because their experience was a whole lot more traumatic than mine.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
It was a horrible, I mean, just terrible situation. And I think their experience with adoption going forward is going to look a lot different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
So they are in therapy, which I pushed and pushed and pushed. And
good.
And they are.
And when they're ready, you can send them to podcasts and books.
Absolutely. And I play it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my dad's actually.
They're lucky, there's that word, but that you're in their life.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the day when we can connect on that. Because they're mm-hmm. still, you know, they're like young teens.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm letting them do their thing. But someday I'm hoping, like, I'm here. We can yeah. talk about it. But my dad is actually reading The Primal Wound right now.
Oh, good.
So they've made a lot of progress. And even my mom, like my grandma still to this day, she's 85 and she's like, everything's great. Adoption is great. I don't understand why all you people are listening to these podcasts and reading these books. There's nothing
wrong. I was
wrong.
Fine without any
right.
of it.
My life's been great. I'm like, I know your life's been great, grandma, but you're traumatized. And my mom is like always trying to bring it up with her when we're all together, like, talk to Margaret Jane. She'll talk to you. Let's work on this. And I'm like, she is 85 years old and happy. Just let her live in her fog. She's yeah. fine. I'm not yeah. going to try to push her out. you know.
Yeah, that would be horrible. Like, having to like come out of the fog, and then what do you do with that at 85?
I don't know. It's overwhelming.
Like, she's lived her life. She was married and had her kids and has her grandkids.
And yeah, and she can't meet her biological. She can't meet her mother.
She met her biological father because her husband contacted him. He did it. We have these pushy husbands. So, she did. And she did have a younger sister that she did have a relationship with until the sister passed away.
So she had some knowledge of her.
Yeah. And she had pictures. And
okay,
she did end up having information. And like, we're still in contact with, I have cousins that are like from the biological. So the branches of my family are so wacky. It's so wacky. It is. So we do have contact with her biological family. And my grandma's also just a very calm person. She's the type of person who would be like, everything's great, let's just keep going. You know,
right. It's a different, also when you're born, they went through a lot in that generation. It's a whole different.
Yeah. I mean, she was placed because of the Great Depression, right, and the impact that it had on her family. I mean, they couldn't feed her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there was no other. It was awful. There was no other option. So I don't know if she's just like very accepting of it or if she's just genuinely very happy, but I'm not going to disturb that. Like,
I think she's wise.
She's wonderful. I'm named after her. My daughter's named after her. So like, I don't know. It's fine.
Well, this has been awesome. I love talking to you. It's finally, we got to, it took a long time, but I'm glad. Really glad.
I'm glad it worked out.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on
and sharing.
It's so important, like all the connections that you have and just the openness, because that is the point, right? Like education, open learning, and just hearing it from you at a younger age is very important.
Yeah.
For other people that hear this. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you, Margaret. And please keep us posted when you decide to take that next step with your grandfather. Really,
it seems like it's going to happen sooner rather than later these days.
Definitely keep us posted. I'm really happy to have met you.
I'm so glad to meet you guys too. I'm such a big fan. I was excited because I listen to you guys every single week and I always look forward to it. Big fan of you guys. You guys are
Margaret Jane. Thank you.
Mutual now.
Yeah, mutual fan. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you. You guys too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Really liked Margaret Jane. What a great story, interesting story.
Yes. And surprising story. Like, really.
And she's so young. I mean, it's just amazing. She's Becker's age. And
I know.
To, you know, what a fortunate situation to work through all this at a young age. And, you know, the awareness as a parent of her own stuff that I did not have, really
what I was thinking when she was speaking, how much her children are going to benefit
from
her figuring this out young, and her life too, because you do carry this heavy weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can let go of some of this.
She went through the grief. She grieved, you know, whereas we grieve much later. Yeah.
We don't even have to say.
We're still like, grieving.
Laughing about that. Well, thank you, Margaret Jane.
Thank you, Margaret Jane. Really great. I really, really enjoyed that.
Well, what do we say?
We say another great episode.
Another great episode. See you next time.
Thanks so much for listening today. And remember, if you'd like to share your stories or suggest any guests for our show, you can find us on all the socials at The Making of Me Podcast.
And again, we have a Patreon page so that we can continue to bring these great adoption stories to you. So if you want to find that and donate or contribute in any way, find us at patreon.com, searching adoption: The Making of Me.
Bye.
See you next time.